Hey everybody, welcome to the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McTosh. Joined as always when we talk about Raw by David J. McCutcheon. Now David, it is very much the road to WrestleMania. Oh my god, there is so much happening. Daniel Bryan has been cleared to wrestle.
Oh my goodness, Kenny, what are you doing? You silly man, you! We're sitting here, we're talking about the most wonderful news that's ever happened to anyone ever. And, I want to go up to one of those couples that's been, like, trying to have a child for the longest time, you know, and they're really excited because they finally, you know, the lady finally got pregnant, and they're celebrating. I want to go up to him and give him a big hug and just go, I know exactly how you feel. Daniel Bryan's going to wrestle again, you guys. Just skip away. La-da-da-da-da.
That's how I like to imagine that you behave in day-to-day life. David and Sandra and I got together and we recorded an emergency podcast for Patreon at the $5 level. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where we answer dozens of questions from all of you guys on Twitter and Facebook about Brian coming back, what it means, what he's going to be doing, what schedule you want him to have, what matches you want to see, what all the stuff. So head over there. But I guess we should talk about Raw.
What level is that, Kenny?
$5 level. The $5 level.
So theoretically, they could go over there and just test it out for $5 for 1 month. And then if they like it, they get to keep it. And if they want to go down to the $3 level or just outright cancel, they could even do that, right? They could test it.
They can test it. If they go to the $5 level, they're also next week going to get Sandra, myself, and Finn Martin reviewing WrestleMania 14. I mean, wow. Why would you not want to hear that? Go ahead and try us out. We're sitting over 600 patrons. Very, very, very appreciative of everybody that hands over some money to us. It means a lot to us. So at the weekend, one of my friends runs a short film festival in Glasgow. And it was her birthday. So she was like, do you want to come along? So they were doing this like this night. It was like a big night of short films focusing on African-American artists and stuff. So I went along and there was these like six short films. There was one that was on this guy Vincent Staples, who's a rapper, and he was promoting his new album Prima Donna, and he did this like weird little mini documentary where he was like, I need a vacation, and then this taxi driver drove him to like a weird hotel that doesn't exist, and it was like he died and he saw like Amy Winehouse and Kurt Cobain in the 27 Club. It was very strange, but it was really good, really, really fun. There was one on Black Lives Matter in America, which was fascinating. And then there was one, and I actually want to find out what the name of it was, because it kind of, hang on, let me just try and Google it here. So there was a documentary by a rapper about Ferguson, Missouri.
That's about a 30-minute drive from where I live right now.
And it was it all came from you probably know this because you live nearby. There's a lot of African Americans get killed in Ferguson, and this.
Yeah,
rap-
yeah. There's no African American men on the police force, et cetera, et cetera. I actually drive through Ferguson once a week every Saturday. I'll go up to RBI Crew 7, local shout out to my buddy Neil and Ryan. They listen and they run the shop up there up north, and I will drive through Ferguson on my way home from their shop. So absolutely every week, Ferguson's a good community. Gets a bad rap due to what happened there, but it's a perfectly safe community. I never feel unsafe driving through it or anything. Stop and grab some lunch. It's a good place.
Well, it was a really interesting documentary, actually. It was this this guy, this American rapper. I'm trying to find out the exact name of it, because, of course, I'm going to get it wrong.
Sure, Nelly, who's from here, who stayed silent about the whole thing.
It was definitely not Nelly. But what was interesting about it was that I'm going to find what we're talking. So a bunch of kind of rappers and stuff did this like night out. Oh yeah, here it's called #BarsForJustice, and I want people to seek this out if you're interested. And it was basically about how all these rappers and people were doing this like night to raise money for like a family of a guy who'd been killed. And the night they did the concert, another black guy was killed.
Yeah.
And they all protested it and stuff like that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
of course.
And then
man.
The final documentary of the night was this like 40-minute 1986 short film called Big Fun in Big Town, which was a Dutch documentary about this really naff Dutch guy who goes to New York in 1986 to review the rap scene. And it's just like the greatest movie of all time. It's like a Dutch hip hop documentary. It got released in DVD in 2012. And it's just great. And then at one point they interview LL Cool J and they interview Run DMC, and like the guy that this like, you know, random Belgian TV presenter guy who's like wearing shades the whole time is talking to LL Cool J. He's like, "So you do the love raps? Why is that?" And it's but I know nothing about rap or hip hop, so actually it was like really interesting. So Big Fun in the Big Town, it's on DVD if you fancy it, check it out. I just thought I would mention those films. And
sounds pretty fun.
If there's like, so if you're like, wherever you are, like, you never know, there might be like a short film festival like where you are, and they're really fun. Like it's especially if you're like me, where sometimes you're like, I can't be bothered watching a 2-hour movie, so like watching seven documentaries that range from like 9 minutes to 40 is really good, because you can
it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking about this the other day. I don't watch a whole lot of Netflix, you know, everybody's like, "Oh, have you caught the new season of Jessica Jones yet?" you know, or something like that. And for me, sitting down and making a hour commitment, and usually I have to watch 2 episodes of something, so that's a 2-hour block of time. I don't really have 2 hours to spare most days. So it's sort of funny, though, whenever I'm sitting there and like I'll put on, say, BoJack Horseman or something like that, Arrested Development, something like that that's very easy to digest, and it's like 20-minute episodes, you know, each episode's like 22 minutes or whatever. I can sit there and I can watch the entire fucking season of that, you know, whatever the series is for the new one. It's all like, oh, yeah, you know, that was 8 hours worth of episodes, but, you know, it was you got to compartmentalize them into smaller fragments. I can easily sit through something like that, but if you tell me I have to watch 2 episodes of an hour-long show, I will go kicking and screaming into the living room. Like, fine, I guess I have to do this.
Yeah,
so it's kind of funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. So yeah, we're going to get straight into it, because there's a lot of stuff happening, and obviously we have the ultimate deletion to talk about. It's amazing that I keep saying it and don't say the final deletion, because that's just what I want to say.
That's what everyone wants to say.
So this episode of Raw, definitely still a lot of newsworthy stuff on the road to WrestleMania, so let's kick off. Kurt Angle's music plays. We're in Dallas, Texas, at American Airlines Center. Dallas, Texas has kind of a... not the greatest memories for me, because I hate that WrestleMania. but anyway, Kurt Angle comes out. We're sold out in the venue. He starts with some bad news. Roman Reigns' suspension is still in effect. He'll not be here tonight, but Brock Lesnar will. He's on his way. He said that, you know, Braun Strowman won the tag title Battle Royal to get a tag title. But before he can do anything else, Roman Reigns walks through the crowd without any music. Now, I don't know about you, David, but I barely recognize Roman Reigns when he wasn't in his gear, because when he's in casual clothing, I mean, you couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, he blends in so well to society, you know, and I guess that's why he got through, you know?
I do love, though, that basically when he's wearing a t-shirt and jeans or like khaki trousers or whatever, he is exactly dressed like his gear, like to the letter.
A doppelganger.
A doppelganger. So he comes, he ends up getting in the ring. Angle's saying, you know, what are you doing? You're trespassing, you're suspended. He's like, Reigns is like, who cares? You know, Lesnar wasn't here the last few weeks. Angle told him, you know, wait, you've got my WrestleMania, you've got him in 3 weeks. Reigns says, no, he wants to make a moment tonight in Dallas. There's a lot of memories here. And then Angle basically sets up a chair in the ring to sit down. He's not leaving. And then 3 U.S. Marshals in tactical vests come out to read him his Miranda rights. Now, also,
Yeah, hold on, Kenny. Were those tactical vests, or were they just Roman Reigns vests that they bought at the merch store?
One of the two. What I thought was the funniest was, so one guy's reading him his Miranda rights. Now, if you read Miranda rights on a regular basis, do you need to read it off of a little piece of paper?
No. I'm going to see if I can recite the Miranda rights.
Okay,
hold on.
Well, let me try and get it on Google so that I can. Okay, the warning. Okay, hang on. Okay,
make sure that you have the American version too. I know that yours is different.
Okay, what are the words of the Miranda rights? Okay, yeah, I've got it here. Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to see if I can do this off the top of my head. Kenny McIntosh, you are under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. Anything that you say or do can be held against you in the court of law. You have the right to an attorney. Damn it, I think that's all I got. How close was I, though?
Here are the words. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you can and anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you.
Yeah, nearly got the entire thing. Pretty good, right?
Now,
yeah,
I'm not being funny. Do you really need to read that off paper? Like,
no, I mean, Kenny, come on. I fucking, like, all I did was watch the TV show Cops whenever I was little, and I...
There you go. It's funny. Yeah. I'm going to get to come and tell the story in the podcast soon, but Joe Hendry, he actually appeared on Raw in 2014 as one of Rusev's Russian translator people.
And, oh, that's great.
And when he was, like, doing it, he was trying to do it, and there was a couple other people up for the part, and he basically figured out there was, like, a page of dialogue. And he knew if he memorized that and didn't need the paper, he'd get it. He'd get to do the gig.
Yeah, sure.
So he did it in the Russian accent. And somebody came up to him and said, Vince has some feedback on your promo.
Oh, Lord.
And Vince thought it was great. They gave him another page of script.
Because
because he'd been able to recognize it. So he fucked himself. But he ended up doing well in the end. It went well. So,
oh man, see the rib was on him then, though.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, to be fair, the other Scottish wrestler, Lionheart, who did it, apparently was kind of like, in a Russian accent, just being like, Rusev, you are... It was just Scottish. There was no Russian part to it whatsoever.
For the record, I actually know one of the guys who played one of the U.S. Marshals here. Ricky Starks. Yeah, Ricky Starks. Local St. Louis wrestler. Yeah.
There you go. Was he the man reading the Miranda rights, or was he one of the other ones?
No. He was one of the other ones grabbing Roman and saying, come on, Roman, let's go. He was the second guy to get pie-faced.
Okay.
He took a hell of a bump, too, actually. Roman kind of stiffed him in the neck.
Basically, Roman gets handcuffed by one of the guys, and Reigns takes offense when was it your friend who was touching him?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the second guy to eat it. The Hispanic-complected man.
Okay.
Complexion.
Roman takes offense when the guy touches him while trying to leave the ring. Once they kind of got physical, Reigns fought back. He worked them over. Then Brock's music hits. As Brock just like speeds down to the ring, Reigns is trying to pick up. I did love the visual of like Reigns trying to pick up the chair with the handcuffs on because he knew that he had to try and get it before Brock got in there.
Yeah.
And then Paul Heyman's there just standing carrying the belt. Lesnar gives Reigns a German, picks up the chair, smacks Reigns with the chair numerous times. Gives him another German, and then he picks Reigns up, gives him another one, hits him with two more chair shots, then goes to leave, then he comes back, more chair shots, another German, then he puts the belt over his shoulder, comes back to the ring again, gives an F5, then he goes and leaves, then Roman gets put on a stretcher, and then Lesnar's music plays again, and he comes back, and he smiles and kind of jawjacks at Reigns, and throws him off the stretcher and heads back up the ramp while the referees and EMTs are checking on Roman. Quite a hot angle to start the show for the most part. I know that you were saying last week that you weren't, you know, hugely into the idea of the kind of, you know, escape from reality that this was in some ways last week with the gorilla position thing and the your boy thing. What did you make of this segment and the return of Brock Lesnar for the first time since, is it the Rumble? Is that the last time we saw him on TV?
I think so, yeah. I liked that the heel, Roman Reigns, who was beating up U.S. Marshals and oddly getting cheered for it in the land of Blue Lives Matter down there in Dallas, Texas. So I don't know what all that was about, Kenny. Apparently, if you beat up U.S. Marshals, you get cheered. But if you beat up police officers, you get booed. I don't know. I don't know, man. I just, you know, America sure is funny is all I'm saying. This was kind of funny, though. The bad guy, Roman Reigns, who beats up police officers.
To be fair, though. So many baby faces beat up police officers. It's like the done thing. The only difference here is that Roman is not an effective babyface, which is why
the biggest cultural difference is we weren't condemning black kids that who don't even fight police officers and getting gunned down by them. We weren't condemning
them. Is that like a stretch, though? I mean, like, it's Roman Reigns beating up a couple of guys in t-shirts. It's not really a culturally... It's not like... I mean, this is not really the hill to die on about that. I mean, it's just, it seemed like, it was fine. I mean, I don't think, I would get your point if they hadn't done this a million times before with, like, every other babyface, whether it's Batista or John Cena or Steve Austin or The Rock or, like, everybody's done this.
I guess if you want to smash over a babyface, you have them beat up police officers.
But, like, so but, no, but what I mean is, but why is it different this time if it's happened 100 times before with babyfaces and they are cheered for it? Like, why... Why would it be different on this one?
The cultural differences. Back whenever Steve Austin was beating up police officers, black teenagers, it wasn't like making national headlines that black teenagers were getting gunned down in the streets by cops, unarmed black teenagers, I guess. I just find it kind of funny, Kenny, that the same people who are cheering the good guy beating up police officers in the ring are the same ones that go home with picket signs in their fence that say Black Lives Don't Matter or Blue Lives Matter. It's just kind of funny to me.
I feel like that's a very small, like, I get what you're saying, but I feel like it's like the majority of people, like, on social media and stuff would not be thinking of it in that way. And would not, and I'm trying to, you know, there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who enjoyed the segment, and there is no part of them that sees it in that manner. I'm just trying to play across the other perspective.
Kenny, it was all a joke to begin with, but you're kind of making it into a big deal. So, I mean, you fucking Jesus.
You needed to have a better cadence. I thought you were being seen. I thought this was becoming like a great bit. I was like, I'm going to call him out here on this, and then we're going to get to this big crescendo, and he was telling a joke but didn't put the cadence. Okay.
No. You just ruined everything. I also kind of found it funny too that whenever they were handcuffing him, I'm like, why the fuck would you handcuff him in the front? Like, that makes no sense. How many people have you ever seen? Even whenever Austin would get arrested, right? They would always handcuff him from behind, right? Because that's the way that you do. Whenever you arrest somebody, you handcuff them from behind, right? So we were sitting there watching. I'm like, why the fuck are they handcuffing him from the front? And then the second Brock's music hit, then we were like, oh, that's why they're
handcuffing. Fair play to, like, because, like you say, because that weird way they handcuff him from the front, like, it's got to be tough to take those Germans and stuff.
Oh,
with,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
There's
no protection.
Yeah, there's, like, I didn't like that. I was kind of like, ugh. But what I thought was interesting was, is that the first couple of times that Lesnar had come out and beat up Roman, there was points where Roman was getting cheered. And they kind of were... It was working for a little while, but I felt like they had Lesnar come back maybe like two times too many, because by the end people were... Like, people are not going to boo Brock Lesnar pushing over a stretcher. Like, they're going to cheer that. So it was like, you kind of did this good work that you had and it was fun, and then... I feel like they just went to the well a couple of times too many on that one.
Yeah, and beyond that, it looked like shit. You know, I mean, Brock pushed him over, and he didn't even fall the first time.
I wanted the Rey Mysterio Big Show thing. Remember when Big Show just, like, picked up the stretcher and smashed Rey Mysterio off it? That was what I wanted.
I like the idea of, like, Brock just coming out and, like, uppercutting the stretcher, and then just Roman flying, like, three rows deep into the crowd. Just start crowd surfing like Spike Dudley.
Yeah. I do. It's funny, like, there's so many people about the Daniel Bryan thing. They're like, does this mean that Daniel Bryan is replacing Roman Reigns in the match with Lesnar? I'm like, no! Stop! Stop! Can we just let Roman Reigns beat Brock Lesnar and move on with our lives?
And can't we just enjoy things for what they are? Can't we enjoy Daniel Bryan coming back, just the fact that he's back? Like, seriously.
But also, come, I mean, like, now, the thing is, like, just let the Reigns and Lesnar thing happen. You know, they're doing some fun angles, they're doing some kind of, you know, crazy stuff. Fine, you know, it's, you know, the fact that it's still that kind of like, let's put it, what is this, what is Daniel Bryan's return for Roman, what does Daniel Bryan's return mean for Roman Reigns? Nothing! This got nothing to do with it!
Oh, they are two entirely separate issues. It means nothing.
It was 3 years ago. So for me, I thought the angle was good. I just, yeah, I think when you have a stretcher thing with Roman Reigns, with Brock Lesnar, there's such an expectation of chaos that if you're not going to deliver a huge amount of chaos, then you maybe shouldn't do it.
But, yeah, don't even try it if all you're going to do is lightly tip over the stretcher.
Yep. so they're keeping it going. I don't know if, I think Lesnar is on, he's definitely in the go-home Raw. I don't know if he's going to be on next week's, but we'll see. We get Alexa Bliss coming out. She's out with Mickie James. She talks about, you know, she was wrong last week for what she said about Nia, and she was just joking. She was kind of doing the whole thing about, you know, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean it, and then she ended up just saying, I'm sorry I didn't do it sooner. And just did the classic Alexa Bliss promo of making you think that she's sorry and then just being a bitch. Mm-hmm. She doesn't feel 1 ounce of remorse. She said Nia Jax was humiliated and she loved every second of it. She's never liked Nia. She used her. And now that it's behind her, she can end Asuka's unbeaten streak. What did you think of Asuka's pre-match promo?
You mean Alexa's?
Alexa's pre-match promo.
That would be impressive if Asuka came out.
It was ventriloquism. I don't know why you didn't pick up on it. It's very clear to me.
I thought there was a bit of an accent there. I was a bit confused though. this was good. I feel like this is kind of becoming Alexa's shtick though. Where it's she comes out and leads people one way and then swerves them into the other way. So don't want to see that trend, but at the same time, in isolated cases, it's pretty good. And it's not like that's the only promo she cuts. I just don't want that to be like her gimmick promo, more or less. But yeah, no, this was a good time. I enjoyed it. And pretty much the following match that ensued went exactly as I thought it would.
I didn't like the Asuka Alexa Bliss match at all.
Yeah, I know.
I just thought it was a bit. I think that's kind of like when you see this kind of match, then you kind of, it kind of reminds you that Alexa Bliss is not in the ring where she kind of needs to be in some ways, and it's not that obvious until you put her in the ring with somebody like Asuka, who, you know, Asuka's not a promo person. She's all about the in-ring.
Absolutely. And this is kind of makes you happy that they didn't go that way for WrestleMania and that we maybe dodged a bullet.
Yeah, I think for sure. A great tweet that was sent out after Daniel Bryan announced that he was returning, Chad Gable retweeted going, father-son tag team? So after the match though, because Alexa gets counted out, Nia Jax runs down, she's going mental, she's trying to get to Alexa, she tosses Mickie James into the side of the ring, Alexa manages to escape through the crowd, and then Nia's just kind of, you know, people are going mad for Nia, and then we end up seeing Alexa backstage with Kurt Angle. Alexa saying that Nia Jax should be arrested, and then Angle said the Raw Women's Champion should be a role model, not a bully, and he announces at WrestleMania that Alexa Bliss will defend the Raw Women's title against Nia Jax. So this storyline continues to be fun and a good storyline at WrestleMania for the women's title.
I actually turned to Val and said I'm happy that they're actually giving them the time of day for WrestleMania, because I think that they've earned it with this storyline.
Yeah, for definitely. The only worry is I think that, you know how like when we get to WrestleMania, we always kind of go, one match is probably going to get cut quite a lot. Like, yeah. I think this one could end up just being Nia sort of getting to kill Alexa, which is not the worst thing ever if you do it the right way, as long as it's kind of, as long as you give Alexa something.
In all honesty, she is the pussyfooting heel. And that would kind of make sense to see her get squashed at WrestleMania, you know?
Yeah, it could happen. Braun Strowman comes out. He talks about how, you know, Kurt Angle said he has to find a tag team partner. He doesn't think he needs one, could win the titles on his own. But then Sheamus and Cesaro come out. Cesaro talks about how, you know, to be a tag team, you need to form chemistry, you need to ride together, and eat together, and sleep together. And then everybody laughs at them. And Sheamus says, grow up. It's talking about rimming together, which is a great line. Strowman interrupts them as they try to do the catchphrase. Sheamus said that he and Cesaro would make Brock's beating of Roman Reigns look tame, and then Braun tells them that Angle gave him a match against one of them, and it was Braun versus Cesaro. Fun match for 8 minutes, and in the end Braun would get the win by doing his running power slam onto Cesaro. Do you think that we're not going to find out who Braun's partner is until they actually come out at WrestleMania, or do you think that we're going to find it before?
Honestly, it kind of depends on who it is. I think that if it's someone like Elias, that we'll find out the week before, maybe. If it is a total surprise, then I think that we will find out at Mania, perhaps.
I've heard a rumor of who it's going to be. I'll not say anything, but the rumor I heard is not like the best, but not terrible. So
okay,
it has the potential to be good.
You will have to divulge that information to me after the podcast.
I will. I'm trying to just not, because I don't know, and I don't want to be the one to say something that's not that and I look stupid. So hi Justin Barrasso. Really looking forward to that John Cena Rey Mysterio match. we'll do all the Ultimate Deletion stuff at the one time, so we'll not deal with that right now. We do get the Revival versus Titus Worldwide. I laughed maniacally when this started. I was like, why is this on Raw? funnily enough though, so my personal trainer Simon, he watches wrestling with his wee boy, who's like five or six, and we were talking the other day, and he said, and you know, it's him and his fiancée was watching, I think I said a couple of weeks ago, his fiancée kind of said, you know, one of the first times watching wrestling, she saw John Cena, and she was like, he's so bad at doing moves. Like, she just... and she, like, doesn't know anything about wrestling. But one of the things that Simon said was, he said, you know who I think is just great in the ring? Is the Revival. And he's never seen them in NXT. And I thought it was really interesting that, like...
Oh, wow,
To someone who, like, doesn't watch NXT, has only seen the main roster, like, their crispness and the way they do moves must be quite apparent to people, because we're the worst guys to ask, because we know we've seen all their stuff in WWE, so like,
yes,
you know, but it's interesting that to newer people it's shining through a wee bit.
So yeah, no doubt. And you know, I was telling Val, I would love to see, I know this gets tossed around all the time, imagine the heat that they would get with like Jim Cornette at their side. That would just transform them into an entirely different tag team and take them up to the upper echelon heel level.
If this was 10 years ago, I think Cornette would have done it. But I think it's just sad. But yeah, they would be great with a manager. Charlie Caruso comes in and asks them what the path to WrestleMania is going to be. They said they should be facing the tag champs, but they're going to be the first tag team ever to win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania. So at least they're getting a little bit of a story to go into the Battle Royal rather than just being in it.
Yeah. It's making the best out of a bad situation.
Yeah, you can't push everybody, and I'm just glad they're getting a little bit of promo time. It makes me feel better about where they might go later in the year.
For sure.
Michael Cole sets up a Hall of Fame video for Mark Henry, a very deserving entrant at the Hall of Fame, one of my favourites, and Hall of Pain, Salmon Suit Retirement, just good stuff.
Yeah. No, I loved the Mark Henry Hall of Pain stuff. And Kenny, is there a better theme in wrestling history for kicking ass than somebody's going to get their ass kicked?
No, that is literally the best for that. I've sometimes just, like, when I'm angry, played it walking to the shops and just, like, angrily walked with that theme on.
Beat him up. Beat him up. Break his neck. Break his neck.
Somebody's going to get their wig split. It's just great.
WWE TV PG, ladies and gentlemen.
Bayley comes out for a tag match with Sasha against Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Interesting note, at the weekend, John Cena and Nikki Bella at the MSG House Show were supposed to face Elias and Bayley, which seems like maybe Bayley was supposed to turn heel at some point, but obviously it didn't happen, so it ended up being Elias and Sonya Deville.
Yeah, possibly.
Anyway, so Sasha Banks, before Sonya and Mandy come out, Sasha Banks gets a mic. She says she wanted to fix whatever happened between her and Bayley. You know, it was every woman for herself at Elimination Chamber. But, you know, what she did with the, you know, not tagging in was just different. Banks tries to shake her hand. Bayley says that she's angry and she acted impulsively the night after Elimination Chamber, but she said that she saw the look in Sasha's eyes at Elimination Chamber, the smirk. It's the way that she did it, not what she did, the way that she did it. She knows that she has to do whatever she can to win her matches, but the look in her face and her smirk, she just can't get that image out of her head. You're supposed to be my best friend, so why was knocking me down so easy like that, like it meant nothing? And then Absolution's music plays, so we get a tag match where Mandy and Sonya defeat Sasha and Bayley. What do you make of the dissension between Sasha and Bayley here, and any notes about the match?
This really needed to kick into high gear this week, and they're still sort of treading water. I don't think this gets resolved at WrestleMania, Kenny.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's the night after or before? Or
I don't know if anything even comes of it at this point. there's no room on the card for it, and after WrestleMania, it's a universal reset. So, I mean, they've got a couple of weeks to resolve this, and that's that.
It seems to me like they've got to be the kind of final two in the Battle Royal. Yeah. Like that's the only women's story that's not part of... You know, like, I mean, you could have Becky Lynch win the Battle Royal, but it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
Whereas Sasha and Bayley, at least, I mean, they're the only story going on, so I guess we'll see. Mandy and Sonya get the win. John Cena comes out. He talks about challenging The Undertaker last week. Says that, you know, we'd find out The Undertaker's response tonight. He said The Undertaker thinks that he no longer belongs. Cena says that's ridiculous. Hypes up the crowd, and, you know, he says, you know, what are they going to say? And then what was the chant again? It was like, give us something, or there was a chant that he got the crowd to say.
Yeah, it sounded like Rusev Day.
Then it sounded
like you suck dick.
It did sound like both of those things. I don't think it was, but it did sound like both of those things.
I was going to say, I don't know what it was, because I kept on chanting, you suck dick, Rusev Day. I just don't know.
We didn't get a response. Cena said, not a yes, not a no, nothing. That's the biggest mistake Undertaker's ever made. It's disrespectful to Cena, disrespectful to fans. Undertaker should just say that he's retired if that's the case, but otherwise, give people what they want. Stop drowning in his insecurities. You're not the god that they made you. You're the man that you've allowed yourself to become. It's quite a good line. That man, Undertaker, is a coward. He doesn't even need a yes or no. He'd settle for a casket or on fire or something. I thought Cena was really good here, actually. Be a man. Be the Undertaker.
They're going to actually spring forth the money for that pyro to light that casket.
I know, right? But this was the point where the fans are chanting, do something, because Cena was saying, be a man, be the Undertaker, do something.
Which
to me though, John Cena deserves almost the same bonus that Braun Strowman gets for getting Get These Hands over, because Jesus.
That's some 1970s dire ass chanting right there.
Cena said that this is the movement the Undertaker let. This is the moment, sorry, that the Undertaker let everyone down who believed in him. You're not a god, and right now you should barely be able to call yourself a man. That invokes Kane's music to hit. He comes out looking obese, and he Cena said that Kane was sent by the Undertaker to get an answer. What's the answer going to be? And Kane just grabs Cena by the throat and choke slams him. And we get told after the match that we're going to get Cena versus Kane next week, which I guess we maybe get the answer next week. You weren't super keen last week on the promo that Cena had done. What do you think about the promo here that Cena cut up with The Undertaker, continuing to kind of humanize him and sort of knock him quite a lot.
Oh man, this was dire. Oh, this is they've only got a few weeks to play with here, Kenny. They needed to either shit or get off the pot, as my mother would so poignantly state. And they did neither. So what we're stuck with is John Cena. His promo was pretty good this week, I'll give him that much. But man, oh man, come on, guys. This is you don't have infinite time to play with. There is a very finite amount of time remaining until WrestleMania to build this match. And you go on every week, every year, Kenny, about how The Undertaker needs one big story to go. And as is right now, they have to deliver that story in, what, 2 weeks?
I think that, I mean, what they need? They need Undertaker to come out and cut this kind of great promo, right? Or not, a promo where he responds to everything and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, maybe they just think that that's kind of the one thing they need to do. And that's fine. I mean, I would have preferred I would have preferred to see him here. I needed to see him here. I think that you can still do it next week. But the thing that gives me pause is that, you know, sometimes you go, well, you know, I wish I'd got it this week, but I'm going to get it next week. I'm already nervous about what we're going to get.
Yeah.
So if I was confident that everything was going to be great when we get it, I would be fine. But I think it's more just like, it's another week of me going, I'm fucking terrified of what we're going to get. Now, if Undertaker comes out next week and cuts this fucking promo, all this needs is one Undertaker promo to John Cena to make this a match. That's all it needs.
Yeah.
But that promo does need to happen. Which is the... And I thought Cena's promo here was really good. I mean, Cena versus Kane is not something I need in my life. But, you know, fine. It's one of those things, I feel like I don't want to bitch about it too much, because like I say, if Taker does come out next week and cuts a great promo, then I'm all in. But I feel like I'm going to channel John Cena here. Undertaker, do something! that's what I need.
Like I said, the fuse is nearly to the bomb at this point. And if they don't want this to bomb, they will send the Undertaker out there to light it up. So to speak.
And, you know, Cena, to be fair, I think that's the third time now when he's been talking about this, that he does manage to get the fans into it and get them back. But, yeah, I mean, there's only so long you can do that before you need... I mean, I'm curious, though, because this is kind of the first time this has ever been done, right? The way that Cena's talking about Taker. So I'm just curious about where it goes. I'm curious about what he's going to say when he comes back, because he kind of has to say stuff.
I kind of fear at this point, because how many weeks is it to... How many Raws are left? Two?
We've got two more Raws. We've got next week in Cleveland and then April 2nd in Atlanta.
And see, they've got to do... I worry now that they're not going to have The Undertaker say anything. And I think that is a catastrophic mistake.
I think that if you do that... you're just really missing the boat on some great storytelling that you could have done. And then it becomes... Because I think if Undertaker comes back and there's a great story, it actually opens up a couple more matches that they could do with him, if they want to do that. Because I don't think he's done. But I think that if you just bring him back and he doesn't say anything, it just... It really becomes the greatest hits show. And I think that we've seen enough of the greatest. I need a new track.
Yeah. Yeah, and at this point, too, Kenny, I think that I would prefer to stave all of this off until next WrestleMania and have a proper build than to rush it all straight through in 1 week if they don't actually pick up the ball and score a touchdown next week.
And that's the thing, it's like, if they do that 1 week thing, the amount of pressure that you're putting on that one segment is insane. Like,
You're digging a hole for them and saying, all right, now climb out of it. It's just ridiculous. It's unfair to Cena and Undertaker.
So somebody tweeted me actually during I was recording this, and apparently I've not finished watching it yet, but on the WWE 24 special about the Women's Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
That Michelle McCool at one point has a Dead Man Inc. t-shirt on.
Okay.
Which was like Undertaker's American Badass time.
Yeah.
And you're like...
Course.
There's times that I can hear that she's wearing that. I do not want to hear it right now because that gets my hopes up again that he's going to be humanized. And I'm not, I just, I, the, do you know, I think I'm going to have heart surgery, David, if this fucking keeps up.
I feel bad for you, Kenny, because you're so emotionally invested in this and I just don't see this going anywhere.
I know. And even Sondra's invested a little bit, which is insane. That's what gives me even more fucking pause. It's one thing if it's just me that I need to worry about. If I need to worry about fucking somebody else's enjoyment as well, loads of people. But yeah, we'll see, I guess, next week in Cleveland. I mean, I don't know how you do John Cena Kane next week and not have Undertaker turn up or I mean, if there's a way that he accepts the message next, if there's a message that he accepts next week and then he cuts the promo on the last show, fair enough, I guess. But you need to have him come out and explain why he is coming back, why he left. Like, we need to hear it. So
you want to know why the Undertaker's thing with Brock Lesnar whenever he returned at SummerSlam, why that worked so well, Kenny?
Felt natural.
It felt real. It felt like there was actually something there. And it all culminated because the Undertaker interfered in Brock's match. And then, on top of that, they had that heated pull-apart with the, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you, you're going to have to, mm-hmm. that whole thing. It felt real and it felt natural. And that's because they actually built that up and cared about it. With this, they're just throwing names on a marquee because they think those names will sell. And they will. But will it ultimately be that memorable if it's just a match with nothing tangible and no emotions at stake?
Like I say, for me, I need the promo. Because, I mean, it's funny because I was thinking about this today. You know, the comparison has been made about Rock and Hogan, right? But that's kind of, you know, the level of what it could be, the face-off and all that kind of stuff. The build to Rock and Hogan was atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. Like, the Rock and Hogan face-off, then Hogan runs him over with a truck, and then still gets cheered, then Hogan pins him clean on TV the week before the show. Like,
now see, I wasn't watching for any of that, so okay. All of this is news to me.
So they did this face-off, right, where Rock and Hogan go, like Rock says, I want you to have one more WrestleMania moment with The Rock, and Hogan shakes his hand and they agree to fight. Then the NWO beat the piss out of The Rock, put him in an ambulance, and then have a semi-truck run into the ambulance. Then 2 weeks later, on a tag match on TV, Hogan beats Rock clean with a leg drop. So I guess the point I'm making is, you can still have a classic match and there be a bad build-up, but at the same time, the reason that match worked was because you had that promo at the beginning, where Rock and Hogan faced off, and they made the match. You need Undertaker and Cena to face off, have Undertaker respond to Cena, and make the match. You need that.
Yeah.
That's what you need. And if they have a great segment and do that, I think a lot of people who are not on board could get on board. But people need that, and people want that, and they feel that they're insulted if they're not getting it. It feels lazy to be just told you're getting it without really having any form of story as to why Undertaker's doing it. So.
Yep. It's just so passionless, I think, is my issue with it.
Again, though, good. It's giving us good conversation, so at least we've got
it. It is. And I think that Cena did an excellent job this week in building it. And he's trying to build the passion, but it's like having an argument with no one.
Well, and I'm going to give you a better analogy.
It's kind of hard to argue whenever there's not another person there to participate in
this,
the arguing.
This is like John Cena trying to have sex with The Undertaker while he's asleep.
Oh, no, not CeeLo Green.
What?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a you never knew that?
No.
Yeah, the CeeLo guy.
He never
guy,
tried
you know?
That on me. We just spooned. Anyway.
CeeLo, the musician man, he went on Twitter and he said that it's not rape if they're asleep. So...
Oh,
CeeLo? CeeLo, you better watch yourself, CeeLo.
Oh,
horrible, abhorrent man.
Okay, anyway. So we move from that to we have The Miz, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel coming out. Miz cuts a promo. He ends up saying that the nudge he gave Balon Rollins last week will turn into a big push for Tyler Black and Prince Nevitt. When he sends him back to Bengals.
I love that he botched that name. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but I imagine he doesn't care if it was or not.
Do you know what I mean? What makes me laugh is I think he genuinely just got it wrong. But I love that, like, I was listening to Meltzer talk about it, and he was like, oh yeah, you know. He was basically, like, ragging on The Miz. And I was like, The Miz never watched New Japan. Funnily enough, our lives do not all revolve around New Japan. If somebody's not watched it, and they fluff a name, who cares? Mm-hmm. And plus, it makes The Miz's character better that he fluffed it.
Yeah, he doesn't give a shit what you think. No, it was wonderful. I loved it.
That takes us to Balor and the club against The Miz and The Miztrash. And then in the end, Finn Balor rolls up, Miz gets the win. After the match, Miz and Miztrash beat down the babyfaces until Rollins makes the save, and we see Rollins and Balor standing over the Miz as they both are kind of staring off against each other. So yeah, decent build for the IC title match. It should be good.
Yeah, no doubt. This match, like I said, it's gonna bring the house down, Kenny. It might be the show stealer if AJ is not fully healthy.
Yeah, it could be. We had an excellent video package with Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey, where it was showing you about her in the Olympics, her doing, you know, judo, her UFC strike force, her talking about getting here, her husband supporting her. She briefly mentions the fight that happened in UFC and how she always wanted to be here. This is all she cares about. And this video package for me was better than anything you could have done with her on this show. It was great.
Oh yeah, no, this was excellent. This is the type of stuff that they should be doing with Ronda Rousey. She doesn't have to appear in person every week or anything like that. I think that these segments, like whenever you think of good Brock Lesnar segments, it's always the stuff that's pre-recorded. And I don't think, you know, everybody wants to slight Lesnar for that. And I think that's a little problematic because good television is good television, regardless if it takes place in a ring or a sound stage or where it takes place at. So long as something is captivating, it's not like it can become uncaptivating at random. This is good stuff, Kenny, and I was all about it.
So, David, I don't know if you know this, but I got like a legal letter today. Did I tell you?
Oh, man, I know you're always in trouble with the law, so this doesn't surprise me.
It was actually from Inside the Ropes Human Resources. Kamala is actually my human resources manager. He has no legs, but he can type. So we've got an employee dispute because basically this employee feels that they have been underutilized, underworked, and there was a lot of profanity in it. It was basically Sondra telling me that she's sick of getting given the SmackDown end of the straw, and she has to watch Dolph Ziggler all the time. So she was demanding that
Kenny, no. This is the way that HR works. You don't go around naming the employees. That's bad. That's bad.
No. Now I get to name her because that bitch, right? She was like, oh, I'm going to quit. We know she's never going to quit. This is her thing now. So anyway, she was all confused.
We've got her under our thumb.
Exactly. She's a woman. Anyway. So she ended up saying, I'll make you a deal. You can do whatever the fuck you like, but you bring me on for the Ultimate Deletion. So let me just patch her in here.
I mean, I'm just saying, I'm already here, you guys, and I've heard everything you said. And trust me, it's going in the permanent record.
David, I told you to put it in a minute!
Kenny, don't go for the front door. We gotta go for the back door. Naya's coming that way. Come on!
Make this all sexual. Why are you talking about back
doors? She's still
gonna
come for you.
I feel uncomfortable now.
She doesn't have to fly across an ocean to get me. No, but to be fair, she'd probably come to Scotland over St. Louis. Let's be fair.
Given the choice, I would.
I came to St. Louis once. Remember when I visited?
Yeah, you did. But I will say though, in St. Louis, we are the shooting capital of the world, and in Glasgow, it is the stabbing capital of the world. So I'd rather be stabbed than shot.
I can run away from a knife better than I can run away from a gun.
It's true.
Exactly.
These are my options.
The thing is, if you run away from a knife,
anyway, the Ultimate Deletion was pretty great.
It was. So if you run away from a knife, you're away. A gun can still get you. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
So you're now here to join us for all the Ultimate Deletion chat. So this has been a controversial thing. So, you know, we've got the wrestling critics like Meltzer and Alvarez and Wade Keller who did not like this. They thought it was okay, but it wasn't really a patch on the original. This was supposed to be you saving how much you loved it, but I can see from that you're just going to immediately be like calling bullshit on them.
Have you met me and my feelings? Do you think I can hold this in?
Basically, we get a couple of vignettes through the night where we have Matt Hardy feeding carrots to George Washington, the giraffe. We have Senior Benjamin preparing the battlefield for Annihilation, while Queen Rebecca plays the piano with Wolfgang on her back. Not the UK Championship guy, but the baby. And ultimately it all leads us...
Now I really want more than anything else for Wolfgang to meet Wolfgang.
Well, so Wolfgang the Wrestler sent pins to the Hardys because Rebecca really liked the Wolfgang pins. So
that's awesome.
Friends! So we end up getting the Ultimate Deletion is the main event of the show, and... before we get the actual segment, we get an entrance where Bray Wyatt arrives at the gates of the Hardy compound. He's greeted by Vanguard One, who's got a Matt Hardy hologram welcoming him. Rebby Hardy's playing a piano next to a ring that's set up outside. She's playing Bray Wyatt's music. It's all glorious.
Oh, it's the best!
So good!
Bray Wyatt is coming through the woods to the ring. The referee's in the ring already. And then Matt Hardy says, "Bray Wyatt, I knew you'd come." And we go to break. But I want to ask you, first of all, David, because you're the cynicist here. So let's ask you this. So we come back, and then Michael Cole says, "We apologize for what you're about to watch." Now, first of all, there's a lot of things that we should apologize I've had to watch. But this is like provoked discussion about, you know, does Vince McMahon not want to do this? Is he doing it against his will? Why did he get Michael Cole to say this? Break down what you make of Michael Cole's statement here.
I think that Vince was preemptively panning it. Sort of like, I think this was a mistake, but I'm moving forward with it anyway. And, you know, if it's hot garbage, then I've already apologized for it. But since it was so successful, I think now he's going to take all the credit for it.
I just don't think that Vince McMahon's going to put a... I just don't believe that Vince McMahon is going to put this thing on Raw in the main event position. Give it so much time. Give him so much... I mean, I was thinking about this today. Sandra, do you think in your... You know, 2010, you've been watching since. David, chime in if you want as well. Have you ever seen someone be able to come into WWE and get so much free reign over their own creation and have it main event Raw?
No, not at all. And especially not as something that was created elsewhere. The closest things I can think of in recent years have been AJ Styles and Samoa Joe coming in and being able to use their names and becoming, you know, main event players, I guess, in WWE with kind of their own character or their own personas. And they've done very well with it. But this is something that's entirely created somewhere else. I mean, this is an entire universe that was created in TNA, Impact, Global Force Wrestling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's definitely a take on that. And so one of the things I was curious about, we can get to that later, was how it played to people who didn't see the original TNA stuff. But no, like, this seems unprecedented because this is something that is a creation of Matt Hardy and was very successful elsewhere, and it was still given the main event spot of Raw with multiple vignettes throughout the show. So to me, it seems like Vince McMahon is behind this. It almost seemed more just like Michael Cole, and I'm sure it was a directive for him to be like, "I'm sorry for what you're about to watch." Maybe they were just trying to play up how silly it is or how outside of the norm it is, and that as Michael Cole the character, I guess it seems like something he would kind of pan, because he'd be like, "This is ridiculous. We don't know what's going on. Matt Hardy's just gone mental. The world's gone to fuck. We don't know what's happening." I thought it was a really weird decision, though, to have him kind of bury it beforehand.
All I can tell you, I spoke to Matt yesterday a little bit, and he did say that what went out was the exact plan. Like, it wasn't edited down, it wasn't, like, they didn't change anything, they went with the whole thing that had been filmed, so...
is awesome. Like, it's great that he's getting that much trust, because, I mean, I guess I'm curious to hear what some other critics thought, because I thought it was incredibly successful.
I also think what's kind of fascinating about it is that a lot of the complaints I heard on social media, not a lot, but the few that I did was, like, at one point, Dave Meltzer said... And I like Dave Meltzer. I will argue for him in a lot of ways, but he was like, "You know, it's not like the Impact version was, there was like a cast of thousands," and I'm like, there was never more than like 10 people. like in the beginning. But also, Daniel Morris actually had a great comparison for what this is. Now, I've never watched Star Wars, so I'm using his comparison. This is kind of like the new Star Wars. They were trying to satisfy the people who loved it before, but introduce it to new people. This was just the first one. This isn't gonna be like the only one they do, I'm sure. So do you really want to
Daniel Morris has hit the nail on the head right there, because they brought in a lot of Bray Wyatt lore into the Ultimate Deletion 2, and I'm sure we'll get into that, but that's something I really liked about it. It wasn't just revisiting the greatest hits of the Matt Hardy compound, and that was something I was worried about going into the Ultimate Deletion, was are they just going to try to redo the Final Deletion? Are they just going to try and do a greatest hits tour, and Bray Wyatt doesn't matter? He could just be anyone in this story. And one of the things that meant the most to me watching it was that, no, this had to be Bray Wyatt versus Matt Hardy for it to work as well as it did.
Yeah, and I think that they did a good job of kind of introducing it to the WWE audience. Do you think they did a good job overall, David, of kind of trying to serve all those masters, the people who loved it in Impact and the people who hadn't seen it before? Did they do a good job overall?
Yeah, I thought that they did. There were nice little callbacks. I thought that the graphics were great, how they would like bring it up and, you know, would be like the Lake of Reincarnation. It would introduce different parts of the compound, right?
Almost like a video game. In some ways, like
exactly.
This is this level.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and going from like the Dome of Deletion or the Land of Obsolete Men, that kind of thing.
What it actually reminded me of, and this will fall on deaf ears here, but I know there's going to be listeners out there that go, "Oh." It reminded me of Dark Souls, like whenever you go into a different area and all of a sudden you hear the little music cue and then the title card plays to show you the area that you've entered. And then you know that you're about to get absolutely ass pummeled without loop.
Do you know, I'll be honest with you.
Just like Bray Wyatt in here.
I like the spiritual successor Dark Souls from, you know, From Software's Demon's Souls. It was because this was like the second installment in the Souls series of games. I just wanted to throw that in there.
I know what a huge From Software guy that you are.
Listen,
you know?
I just love a good action role playing video game, specifically ones that are published by Bandai Games for PlayStation 3, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox 360. I'm not going to scream about it. Anyway.
Kenny, since you're so game though, are you looking forward to the remastered ones that they're coming out with this year?
Well, do you know what? I'm going to hold.
What platforms are those on? Kenny, I can't think of it off the top of my head. Do you know which ones that they're making those remasters on?
That's a very good question, but sadly, we've not got enough time to go into Dark Souls. We'll go to that next week.
One of the testaments of the Ultimate Deletion, though, is whether or not...
I love that you just ignored the entire thing. I'm going to continue with my thoughts.
I have nothing to add to this conversation. I got the Star Wars reference, okay?
Okay.
But one of the testaments of the Ultimate Deletion for me was how well it worked for newer viewers, because, like, I mean, Kenny, you and I have been on the, you know, deletion bandwagon since the beginning. I think we actually watched the Final Deletion. No, we didn't watch the Final Deletion together. We watched something together that was like early on in the Matt Hardy series. And it was kind of like, yeah, no, we're super on board with this. And a lot of people didn't know what it was. And it was kind of crazy. And David, I don't remember how you felt about it from the beginning a couple years ago. But I think we've all pretty much been on the Matt Hardy bandwagon for quite a while.
I was over the moon with it from the very inception.
Yeah, because it's great, right? And there are a lot of WWE viewers who didn't watch the TNA stuff, because let's be honest, TNA viewership, not exactly to the level of WWE viewership, to make the greatest understatement on the history of this podcast, maybe.
10% of the viewership of Raw.
Yeah, 10% of the viewership of Raw. And so I was talking to one of my really good friends last night who hadn't watched any of the Final Deletion stuff, not Apocalypto, nothing. And he loved it. He was just over the moon for it. And he shares very similar wrestling sensibilities to me, where, like, he's been to Chikara shows with me and, you know, we're all about time travel and we're weird creatures and that kind of thing. But I was like, I'm really glad that it worked for you. And the world was explained enough to people who hadn't seen the previous incarnations of Matt Hardy and his compound and, you know, Queen Rebecca and Lord Wolfgang. Well, I mean, Lord Wolfgang's new. He's never really been in it because Revy was pregnant with him toward the end. And Sydney Sumowitz, who gets in touch with us quite a bit, said, here's the absolute truth. I have never seen any of the final deletion or any other deletion match. I didn't know any of these people apart from what I was told. Never watched Broken Matt Hardy except for a few matches at random. I knew nothing, yet I loved this more than anything. And she said, like, she was nervous because her brother had been hyping it up and she was kind of excited. So she thought it was hilarious. She laughed a ton too. Just one of those, like, so stupid, it's amazing things. And so I thought it was coolest to me hearing from people who didn't know the Matt Hardy lore and who hadn't seen it in TNA and that it still worked for them. So I think those graphics made a difference. You know, they introduced just enough of the world so that it was familiar and it made sense to people who hadn't seen all the previous stuff.
So let's dive into the match now. So we have the initial point is them wrestling in the ring, and then eventually they end up wrestling. Basically Matt Hardy calls for Vanguard 1 to initiate, and a bunch of fireworks go off around the ring. So eventually they.
I love when Bray's like, initiate what?
Yeah, because...
And then after the fireworks go off, he's like, what is that?
Because Bray Wyatt has done no homework on what he's doing, like none. So then they fight outside into the woods, and then the Vanguard 1 graphic comes up, Dilapidated City, which popped me so hard. I just couldn't get off it. And then my favourite bit of the whole thing, it is my favourite bit of the entire thing, was all the kind of like Hardy, what are they called? The kind of stand-up things in the woods? The big symbols?
When it was the land of obsolete men?
Yes. Were they not in the land of obsolete men before they got to... Oh, no, the house was first, wasn't it?
House was first.
Yeah, yeah.
Introduce them in the house.
Yes, okay, sorry. So I'm getting my stuff. So we get to Dilapidated City, and then Matt Hardy asks Bray Wyatt if the shack behind him reminded him of anything. Then we kind of get a flat... Now, what I liked about this was they actually gave you a flashback to the house burning down when Randy Orton did it. Which was good for people who might not have got the connection. Bray Wyatt kneels down and laughs, and then there's old footage of him, you know, in the shack in his rocking chair. Matt tells him to wake up, and they fight. Wyatt is screaming everywhere, searching for Matt Hardy, and then we get the Land of Obsolete Men, which is where the Hardy symbols come into it. And this is where my favorite bit of the whole thing was, where Bray Wyatt is chasing Matt Hardy, and there's a bit like where Bray Wyatt is chasing around five different symbols, and Matt Hardy's just standing at one at the front, just going, shh. It was the best thing. It made me laugh so much.
It was like a Benny Hill yakety sax.
Yeah, deal. And people were using that as a negative. Like, this is the best thing ever. You're watching this for seriousness?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
People are idiots, Kenny. That's all I got to say.
They are, yeah. That was my favorite bit. Then they end up. Get into the Dome of Deletion, there's a white piano, a ladder. So it ends up that Matt Hardy wants... he's either going to speak to the Chair of Wheels or the Mower of Lawns. And then he gets on the lawnmower, which I swear to God is maybe going 0.25 miles an hour. As he's, like, ejaculating, driving towards Bray Wyatt.
Well, the lawnmower was never super quick. I mean, when he used the Mower of Lawns to destroy Jeff Hardy's lawn or whatever,
can you imagine
it's
how long
not
that
like
must
it went
have taken,
very quickly.
How long must that have taken Jeff Hardy to do that fucking lawn if that's how fast it goes?
Right?
No wonder
well,
you
I mean,
get
I guess
DWI.
He needs to be slow for precision.
Anyway, he tries to run him over, but Bray Wyatt does the crab pose, stands up and smiles. Wyatt kind of gets control a little bit, throws Matt in the ring, drags him out of the dome. And then we see Vanguard 1 showing Bray carrying Matt Hardy towards the Lake of Reincarnation. Bray sets up for a finisher near Skarsgård the boat, but it ends up that he grabs Vanguard 1, but he tells him he'll deal with him later. Wyatt tips over Skarsgård the boat, expecting to find broken Matt Hardy, but instead he finds Senior Benjamin, who's got a globe that he throws at Bray Wyatt. Senior Benjamin starts singing in very broken English. He's got the whole world in his hands. To which then
because
brother...
he had the whole world in his hands.
Literally. To which then Brother Nero pops up and sings the whole world in his hands to Bray Wyatt and then leaves. Presumably to have a drink behind the wheel. And then Matt...
Oh,
come on, it's fine. He can handle it. He's got millions of dollars and a hot wife. Matt then hits... Like, I always remember Ricky Gervais said that the Golden Globes, people were like, oh, you're making fun of people. He's like, they're millionaires who look great. Matt Hardy hits Bray Wyatt with a twist of fate and pins him to win the match. Then Bray Wyatt gets up and says, it's not over. Matt Hardy begs to differ. and shoves Bray Wyatt into the Lake of Reincarnation, tries to get Senior Benjamin to retrieve Bray Wyatt's carcass, and after searching, Benjamin says that he's not there, and Matt Hardy declares that the Great War is over and Bray Wyatt has been deleted. He does the delete gestures, Vanguard 1 kind of flies away as Raw goes off the air. This was nuts. David, I'm coming to you first. Break down some of this for me. What were the good parts? What were the bad parts? What do you think of it overall?
I'm with you. I love the Yakety Sack stuff. The like Bugs Bunny cartoon. That was great. How everything was sort of sped up. Just really funny.
So good.
I think the thing that made me laugh the hardest was Matt getting on the mower of lawns and ejaculating everywhere. I love that. That was seriously so funny. Him just up there, just the face he made. It's just so great. I feel like the comedic timing is just down perfectly. I love the callbacks to the house burning down for Bray Wyatt. I think that this may reinvigorate Bray Wyatt whenever he inevitably returns. Maybe Bray Wyatt goes off of TV for a while. I think that would be better for him than anything, right? Like Jim Cornette always says, how can I miss you if you won't go away? So maybe him disappearing for a little bit would do some good. I love Senior Benjamin and how his stress level is never above a one. I wish I could be like that, because Senior Benjamin's just a cool customer, Kenny.
He's the best. I remember because when we were doing the Matt Hardy shows in the UK, I was like, can we get Senior Benjamin to record a video? And they were like, yeah, sure. And then he records it like in his room or something, and he's like, Mr. Hardy, I prepare the battlefield. Ha 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 ha. And I was like, this is the best thing ever. Like, this is work. Getting Senior Benjamin to record a video for you.
Yeah, seriously. And this is just brilliant, man. I truly loved it.
Big shout out to Rebby Hardy for doing a really great original version of Bray Wyatt's theme tune on the piano.
That was awesome.
It was literally possibly my favorite thing about the entire thing, but you know, it was that was more cool than funny though, right? And so it's very hard to categorize those things. My favorite thing in the Broken Universe is Skarsgård, the dilapidated boat. So I was really happy that Skarsgård got some quality screen time after so long. In fact, for my boss's birthday, the year that the final deletion took place, I actually bought him a dilapidated boat t-shirt. So, yeah. And also, he's not even a wrestling fan, and he tuned in to Raw to watch the Ultimate Deletion. I think that is the biggest testament of positivity that I can give this thing.
Yeah, I'll be very curious to see what the ratings are going to be for Raw. I'm very, very... The thing is, Matt Hardy did say that for 2 hours after Raw went off the air, the Ultimate Deletion was the number one trend on Twitter. And that doesn't tend to happen too often. Sondra, before we get to you, I just wanted to read out just a couple of funny tweets from Matt Hardy. I tweeted out during the show, Matt Hardy just deleted Bray Wyatt in the most bonkers Raw main event of all time. The Ultimate Deletion lived up to the hype and more. Fantastic. So proud and happy for Matt Hardy. And then this guy...
Even give him any fucking...
I would never name who he is. Time. But he was like, you think this is the most bonkers main event of Raw? And I was like, it took place at a compound where there was fireworks, a dilapidated boat, and a Lake of Reincarnation. Could you give me any examples of any more bonkers main events? And I went to bed, but David took over for me.
Oh, no.
I was just like, this motherfucker! And he could not give me... He was like... The Nexus's attack was pretty bonkers. I was like, yeah, guys in an arena.
Wow, man, they came down to the ring and they put a guy through a table and oh, man, it was nuts. He made a poll, by the way, and on the poll, one of the choices was the Chris Benoit tribute show. So in case you wanted to know what a fucking garbage human this guy is, that's what it was.
God. But Matt Hardy did retweet my tweet and said, gracias, mi amigo. The Ultimate Deletion was me. Now, this is what I was trying to say in my tweets last night, but nobody really got what I was trying to say. The Ultimate Deletion was merely an introduction to my Broken and Woken universe, to the WWE universe, merely the genesis. But my favorite tweet of all is Mick Foley tweeted out about it, and he tweeted, I have no idea what the fuck I just saw, but I liked it. #FinalDeletion. To which Matt Hardy said, "Oh, brother Francis, the mystical magic of the Hardy compound forced you into a state of wonderful wool gathering, which ironically caused you to mistype the correct title of this prolific purging, the ultimate deletion. Muchas gracias."
The final deletion was years ago.
Sandra, talk us through this match, which of course was, you know, maybe one of the top 50 most bonkers main events on Raw behind, Coco Beware and Yokozuna had one.
I'm just saying, on Retro Raw, we just watched a main event segment where The Undertaker came back standing on a Tron, burned an effigy of Kane in a coffin using lightning powers, and Kane made fire after, you know, Mark Miro ran away and Kane faced off with Sable, and that doesn't touch the ultimate deletion, right? Like, everything I just mentioned there, that happened. That was definitely a main event segment of Raw, and yeah, like, Kane going to chokeslam Sable was a thing, but the ultimate deletion was far and away just, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I had a lot of trepidation going into it, not because I don't trust Matt Hardy and not because I don't trust that he is creative and brilliant and could pull this off. I didn't know how behind it WWE would get. It seems from all reports that Vince McMahon was fully on board with this, that he loved the final deletion, that he, you know, got a big kick out of it and everything. But you never know with WWE. Sometimes they overproduce things. Sometimes they, you know, stick their fingers in it too much and it just gets all ruined. I mean, a lot of people were mentioning the whole New Day versus Wyatt's at the Wyatt compound thing. And I figured it wasn't going to be anything like that, because what New Day and Wyatt's lacked was Matt Hardy and the heart behind all of this and the heart behind that whole universe that he's created. And thankfully, this exceeded my expectations. Like, I tried to keep them tempered. I wasn't ready for all of the feelings that I had. I was super excited. Even with my hesitation, I was like, this is going to be brilliant. From everything, it sounded like, you know, they were given free rein. They were given creative control. They were given all sorts of reins to make this amazing. And I wasn't ready for all of the Bray Wyatt feelings to resurface, you guys. Like, that's the one thing coming out of this. Matt Hardy is brilliant. Rebby Hardy, you know, with everything that she's had to do with, like, creating this broken universe, it's awesome. But I think the way they wove Bray Wyatt into the ultimate deletion, just that was what made me cry about it, because I definitely got tears in my eyes when they were showing flashbacks to the Wyatt compound. And as soon as I saw Bray in the rocking chair in his Hawaiian shirt rocking back and forth like the original vignettes from 2013, I started welling up a little bit, and I was like, this is amazing, because they're at Matt's house, and Bray's house burned down and he doesn't have one anymore, and look how lost he is, and this is so emotional, you guys. And I think there's a moment in the match where Bray, I think, says to Matt, and I tweeted it last night, and I'm trying to remember what happened because I don't have everything in front of me, but I think Bray says to Matt, "Let's go home." And it was this emotional moment for me, because Bray doesn't have a home. He can't go home. He's lost his family. He's lost his Monster Men. He's lost everything. And I think since WrestleMania last year, Bray Wyatt has been such a broken character. Such a broken character, right? Because, I mean, he's been terrible. Even I, as of late, have been not super on board with Bray Wyatt, because I'm just like, you don't react to anything. You're so frustrating. The idea of The Undertaker coming back lately has just re-stirred a lot of anger that I have about the Undertaker-Bray Wyatt situation. We don't have time to go into all of that, but it's just Bray Wyatt's big problem is that he doesn't react to things and the losses don't affect him. Because losing his compound and Randy Orton burning down his fucking compound. So, of course, I had to tweet out boo Randy Orton last night, because they showed the compound burning. They showed the flames. They showed everything, like the aftermath of that feud with Randy Orton, which is the last good thing that Bray Wyatt did. He hasn't really been effective for a whole calendar year. The aftermath of, like, burning his compound and stuff actually came into it. And to me, it highlighted the similarities between Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy. And it highlighted the fact that, yeah, they are kind of the same in a way. They've lost a lot. They have built these universes and these compounds and trying to recruit people to their families. And to me, what I want to see most out of this is, like, yes, I want to see more from Matt and I want to see more of the Hardy compound, but I am super fucking intrigued what happens to Bray Wyatt, because when he goes into the Lake of Reincarnation at the end, he's gone. It's not like he reemerges. I mean, we've seen multiple people go into the Lake of Reincarnation, right? We've seen Jeff Hardy go into it and come back as Itchweed, or come back as other Jeff Hardy, or come back as Brother Nero, or, you know, other things have happened. We saw Abyss go into the Lake of Reincarnation and come back as Joseph Parks before. Bray Wyatt went into the lake and he's gone. Vanguard One tweeted that he surveyed the whole area and there's no sign of the deleted. Señor Benjamin couldn't find Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's gone now. I don't know what happens from here. The possibilities are amazing right now to renew Bray Wyatt and his story and have him maybe come back as an entirely different person. I don't think Husky Harris is the answer because Husky Harris was Husky Harris. And even though I love the tank with the Ferrari engine, yes. You know, like I have a soft spot in my heart for the tank with the Ferrari engine, but I don't think that Husky Harris is the answer. Maybe as a nod, maybe as a reference, sure. But I think Bray Wyatt coming back as an entirely different person who's had to re-examine his motivation and his thoughts and what he's doing here could be super, super interesting. And maybe it's going to take time. Like David said, maybe he should be off TV for a while before he reemerges. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but that's the most intriguing thing coming out of the Ultimate Deletion for me is what happens to Bray Wyatt from here.
This was the best that Bray Wyatt has looked in a year, but I think this incarnation of Bray Wyatt has to go now.
Yes.
Because I don't want to see Bray Wyatt fight anybody. I don't want to see him do anything else. I'm just kind of done with him. And I would rather that this version of the character went out on top in something like this than anything else. David, where do you think Bray Wyatt's character goes from here? And by the way, just to tease you while David talks, I do have the numbers for Raw.
I think that Bray Wyatt's character goes away, actually. I don't think that we will see this incarnation of Bray Wyatt return. Now, that's not to say that he's not going to come back as a monster man, but you know how The Undertaker would go away, and even though he would come back, he wasn't necessarily like, you know, he wasn't necessarily the dead man, as it were.
We could get like, Sad Bat Bray Wyatt.
Yes, exactly, yes, and with the Devil's Peak haircut. Maybe you can get rid of those fucking ugly, gross-ass dreadlocks. I'm sorry, white people, get rid of your fucking dreadlocks. Quit trying to appropriate black culture, okay? You just look goofy and you're stupid, and black people can do that. They're cool. You're not cool. You're fucking chilly, if I may quote George Carlin. So leave that to African-American culture in America, you guys. Come on now. What the fuck are you doing? So, yeah. Did you guys ever hear the story about how Robert went to a concert? And a white guy with a dreadlock shook his hair back, and the dreadlock like went immediately into Robert's mouth as Robert was talking.
No. Are you entering a submarine as you're telling this story?
Yeah, what's happening to you right now? I do remember that story, and I remember it was very disturbing to Robert, for sure.
Yes, yes, for sure.
There are many, many, many people tweeting out that maybe the return of Daniel Bryan is what's going to get Robert back on podcast, so... feel free to send him Twitter abuse. We don't mind. Andrea had a fun kind of, you know, idea on Twitter where she said, okay, so this is an interesting point with Bray. So he's in the Lake of Reincarnation. What if he comes out a man, just like a normal bearded man, and he remembers being a god, so he's desperate to get to that level again, and he has to try and find out what he has to do. There's various things you can do, but
love a Bray Wyatt journey of self-discovery because that's something we've never gotten with Bray Wyatt. That's the one character flaw of Bray Wyatt is he has never been willing to examine himself and actually face up to the fact that he hasn't been successful, right? Like, he really hasn't become the new face of fear. He hasn't been a god. He hasn't been the eater of worlds. And maybe if he comes out of the Lake of Reincarnation and has to face those facts, that could be a great story.
He also should not be on WrestleMania this year. I don't think. Because he, like, Sandra and I were talking about this, like, off air the other day. He's terrible at WrestleMania. Like, lost to Cena, lost to Undertaker, lost to The Rock and John Cena, lost to Randy Orton. WrestleMania's just not his night. But anyway, let's talk about the ratings for Raw. The ratings were down, sadly. But it's not as bad as you would think. The big question about the Ultimate Deletion was the third hour. The show dropped 11% from hours 2 to 3, but hour 3 still topped 3 million viewers, which has only happened a handful of times in recent months.
I think a better question with that is how does it look week to week?
So we don't have the actual like rating as in like the, you know, all, so here's what I do know. Last week We had the average for last week was 3.352 million viewers, with the final hour having 3.275 million viewers. The show this week had, what is the average? Oh yeah, so last night, instead from last week's, which was 3.352, the overall is 3.31, so it's just slightly down. And the last hour had 3.08, which is, they've only been above 3 million in the last hour like a handful of times since late 2016.
So it was good.
So it is still good, even though it did drop a little bit. But I was going to... So if you're in the East Coast, I know that the daylight savings thing hasn't happened yet. So if you're in the East Coast, what time is the last hour of Raw? Like, usually it's 10 to 11. What is it now?
10 to 11.
10 to 11. It stays 10 to 11.
What?
Because daylight savings time did happen. That's why we're only 4 hours apart right now.
Okay, so... But usually the last hour is... Isn't usually if you watch Raw on the East Coast and it starts at 8 p.m. and it's on 8 to 11, or so you guys still have it at your 8 p.m. It's just me that's changed. Oh yeah, okay.
Yes, it's just you that's changed because it comes from Eastern Standard Time.
America rules the world. We get it. Mm-hmm. So overall, David, going to come to you. Summarize. Where do you think Matt Hardy goes from here? Where do you think Bray Wyatt goes from here? And are we going to see another version of a Hardy compound match in WWE?
With Wyatt, I have no clue. I think they're going to keep him off, and then he'll come back as a Sam Vampire Bat. So that'll be his deal. For Matt, this is going to be interesting. I think that we're going to see more of this Woken universe. I think that Vince will get a kick out of it, and he will like the creativity behind it, and we'll see more of it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sorry if all the people out there like Meltzer who are have their heads so far up their own butts that they can't have fun anymore. That's really sad for you. Life is too short. You should have more fun. As for me, I love fun. This is very fun. I love campy movies like The Room and Ricky O, The Story of Ricky. I like that kind of stuff. The campy atmosphere. It's fun. The unintentional that turns intentional comedy. Just really fun stuff. This was great. I loved it, Kenny. It made me happy. It was easily my favorite portion of Raw this week. Maybe even saved the show in some respects.
And give
really
me your,
loved it.
Give me your overall rating for Raw out of 10.
Ooh, due to the ultimate deletion, I'm going to go with a solid 8. We'll go with an 8. 8's a good number. I like that.
8 of 10, that's a good score. Sandra, same question to you. Where does Matt go from here? Where does Bray go from here? Do we get another ultimate deletion match? And where is your thumb for this episode of Raw?
I mean, I hope this is just the start of the Woken universe really making its waves in Raw, because, I mean, if nothing else, the Lake of Reincarnation is a genius plot device if you need to reset characters. I don't think you should use it all the time, but for someone like Bray Wyatt, who's been struggling for years, or, you know, for someone like, I don't know, you could have other people go into the Lake of Reincarnation and maybe become their former selves or become a whole new person. I think it's a genius plot device to have at hand. And I think some of the confrontations you could have with like Matt Hardy and Braun Strowman, bring him to the Wyatt compound or to the Hardy compound. Hey, you were a former Wyatt. That could be kind of interesting, right? I think the possibilities of stuff at the compound are really, really cool. So I think there should be more. I have no fucking clue where Bray Wyatt goes from here, but I hope it's somewhere that's more self-aware and less just laughing and useless, because Bray Wyatt was one of my first favorite wrestlers that I absolutely loved, and I think the possibilities of it right now are exciting. I understand that maybe my heart's going to get broken and he's just going to still be Bray Wyatt and nothing's going to change, because that seems to be the story of Bray Wyatt forever. My thumb is up for Raw. I really loved it. I know I didn't discuss the rest of it with you guys, but I think there was a lot of good stuff on this show. I enjoyed it a lot, and yeah, like, unfortunately I have to leave for work real soon, but you know, I thought Raw was a good episode, and I thought the Ultimate Deletion, it nailed it above and beyond my expectations.
You can find Sondra on Twitter, SondraRuthRW, David at ZOOPSOUL, ain't he great? You can get me at KennyMC1985. Go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes to get the emergency podcast on Daniel Bryan. David, whose theme tune is playing us out this week?
You know, I think that it has to be only one man, and he will delete you. Yes.
What a wonderful episode. Here's Matt Hardy.